So hi, this is Jackie with Panama Relocation Tours. Thanks so much for calling in this Saturday for our weekly conference call. Keep you busy during these pandemic times and keep you informed about what's going on in Panama since you can't come here just yet. Hopefully they'll open up the borders later this year. Today I'm going to be interviewing Nicholas, who I've never met Nicholas, but I've seen his videos on Facebook and on YouTube, and I've see him on Facebook talking about a hostel that he has over in the Vulcan area. And so I wanted to interview him. So many people that come to Panama are retirement age, but in the last 5 or 6 years, I would say we've been getting more and more people that are in their 20s, 30s, 40s, and 50s that are moving to Panama. So I wanted to interview Nicholas because he's certainly not retirement age and find out what made you decide to move to Panama, Nicholas?
Hello, Jackie. Well, I just want to first thank you for having me on. Well, I first stepped foot into Panama in the year 2009. I've always been a traveler, and I had first visited Costa Rica, and eventually I found my way to Puerto Viejo, which is on the close to the border of Panama, and I kept hearing about Bocas del Toro, Bocas del Toro. Had no idea what it was, where it was. And so I ventured over, and from there I kind of hung out for a little while, and I kind of wanted to leave Panama because I had been there for so long. I wanted to go north of Nicaragua. However, the weather wouldn't allow it. There was flooding going on. They closed the border at Sixiola, and they forced me to actually go back to David to go to take a bus back to San Jose to get to Costa Rica. Long story short, in a sense, I found a hostel where I could work at, and at that point, I was doing everything that the owners wanted. I was working from the morning to the moment I went to bed. I mean, making coffee, breakfast, working the bar, cleaning the rooms. I did everything, and it was fun. I had the energy to do it, but there is where actually I met my ex-wife, and so we formed a relationship, and as time went on, it also didn't quite work out, but we did have a beautiful daughter together, and she basically became everything to me, obviously. And I had built a house there, and that was in close to 2010, in a town called Varital, which is on the way to Bugaba, right before Bugaba, which is before Via Vulcan, up towards Vulcan. And so we separated, and at that point, well, I had to go back to America because I didn't have a home anymore. But I wanted to spend my life with my daughter, and I wanted to raise my daughter, and that was kind of taken from me. So those were some dark days for me, but, you know, it single-handedly brought the best thing into my life, which was the dream of creating the Salasop Hostel. I had to figure out a reason to work and to live in Panama so I could raise my daughter, because I knew I couldn't bring her back to the United States. So what I did over the course of my relationship with my ex-wife, I had purchased small pieces of land incrementally from her parents. And so it was a small piece for $1,000 here, and the next year was another small piece for $1,000 there. And soon I had a good enough size to actually build a house on. And so my intention was to build a home, but I had to clear some little bit of jungle. I had to cut down a couple of pifa trees, a pear tree, which wasn't producing at the time, but I had to clear just enough space to build something small so I could at least go back and forth from Panama to the United States so I could spend some time with my daughter. And there was a giant tree. It was a guanabana tree, a soursop tree, and I didn't cut it down yet. I looked at it, and it was towards the end of the day, and I was speaking with my neighbor, and he said it was a great tree. I had tasted the fruit before, but he recommended I didn't cut it down because it tasted awesome, and it was good for you. The tea was very good for you, very powerful, had a lot of health benefits. So I held off on cutting it down, and I had to actually head back to the United States because I only had a short amount of time to be there. So when I returned back to the United States, I'm like, oh, I gotta check out for some more information about this guanabana tree. So the first thing I did, I went back, I Googled guanabana and soursop, and then all this information started popping up on the screen. You know, it's a cancer killer. It's 10,000 times stronger than chemotherapy. It has all these health benefits.
Yeah.
And I couldn't believe what I was reading. And I actually literally fell down to the ground laughing, and I thought to myself, there's no way that I have the cure for cancer on my property. There's no way, right? But that actual moment sparked the idea of, you know what I can do? I can build a hostel in Panama and offer free fruit, vegetables, and medicinal teas from my land in exchange for their stay. And those things would be free. And that would hopefully entice them to come visit. There was, at that time, and maybe even still now, there was nothing like that in Panama that will actually offer things from their land. I'm sure there's certain places that do offer certain, you know, trees and fruit, but we want to specialize in it. And that was basically that sparked the dream, that between wanting to spend my life with my daughter and that particular tree.
It's amazing how sometimes things just happen. They just fall at your feet. But yeah, the soursop, or we call it guanabana mostly here in Panama, it is an amazing medicinal fruit that does have, if you research it, it has tons of information about how you can cure cancer with it, prevent cancer. I even know a lady that lives over in Bocas del Toro, close to Chiriqui Grande, on the mainland of Bocas del Toro, that had breast cancer. And you know, she didn't want to do the chemotherapy and radiation and all the other things. And she just did guanabana like 4 times a day, every day, and her breast cancer completely went away.
Incredible.
So I know at least one person that it worked for them. So it is amazing. And I'm sure people would come from all over. I mean, you can get guanabana. It's in season, certain seasons here in Panama. But people will be glad to come to a place to learn more about the medicinal benefits of it and to have access to it from a natural tree right on your property.
Yeah, absolutely. And as time passed, we acquired a little bit more property, a little bit further back from where we are. I mean, it's only about 50 meters away, walking distance. It's not connected. But we planted, I don't know, I would say at least another 6 or 7 more guanabana trees in the back part of our farm, because we know we want as much as this as we can possibly handle. You know, the fruit, not only is it very, very beneficial, it tastes like candy. It, when you get the perfect soursop, it tastes like a combination of cotton candy and strawberry and pineapple. It's absolutely delicious. And when March hits, the month of March tends to be the best time for that particular tree. And there will be sometimes, I'll let them fall. I won't actually go up and climb and take them down. I'll let them fall. And when they do, you'll hear that thud, and we'll go out there running as fast as we can before the bugs can get it. And it's absolutely delicious. It's definitely my favorite fruit.
Yeah, I buy it when it's in season here, and then I'll, you know, cut it open, get all the big black seeds out of it, and then freeze it and save it for smoothies later on. But it is delicious. It's so, so sweet.
Yes, it is.
So did you find it difficult to start a business here in Panama? As your wife Panamanian?
Well,
did that help a little bit? No.
My ex-wife is Panamanian. My current wife is an American. For the actual process was difficult. It did take some time. I remember, well, I didn't have a car at the time, so every single morning I was getting on a bus going down to Bugaba, to the municipal there, and you know, getting paperwork, going to the bomberos, getting paperwork, filling that out, going back and forth. Obviously, you have to deal with Autoridad de Turismo, because I deal with tourism, and also the other one, Autoridad de Inversión, I think it's called, Negocios de Comercial. Both of those, they both had their layers and steps towards completing the process, and it did take some time. It was, you know, at times it was a headache, but in all actuality, I hammered it out, it seemed like, in a couple of weeks, because every single day I went down there and I was just, they said, well, we can't get the signature for this because this person isn't here right now. Can you come back on Wednesday? I'm like, well, how about tomorrow? Can we do it tomorrow? So I kept trying to push them a little bit faster, and I was very persistent, and I was actually able to move the process along a lot faster than I anticipated. Now, with dealing with Autoridad de Turismo, the tourism agency, was a bit different, because when I first built the core of the hostel, it was a bit smaller. It was only two rooms, a kitchen, and a bathroom. And my plan originally was just to rent out a room, and I'd have the other room start something small, and then continuously build on as the time went on. And when they came to inspect my soon-to-be hostel, they asked me, well, where was I staying? I said, well, I'm staying in that room. Well, you only have one bathroom here. I'm like, yeah. He's like, well, you actually need a bathroom for yourself, and you need a bathroom for the guests, and you need at least two rooms to offer. And I was planning on building, obviously, more rooms and another bathroom, but at that time, they had to kind of, you know, they say, all right, well, contact us again when you have these things built. So as time went on, there was a process where I would come back to the United States, and I'd work for 3-4 months. I would do 2-3, even at times 4 different jobs. I hadn't met my current wife yet, so I had all, and my daughter was obviously in Panama, so I had all the free time in the world, and I was just nonstop grinding, working, and saving money for this dream. And so after 3 months, I would come back, and I'd start with the next project. All right, let's build 2 more rooms now. And so after those 2 more rooms, and then the bathroom I added on in those next 3 months, went back to the United States, worked again. And so, and then after that, came back again. Okay, well, now I want to build a tienda, a small little convenience store that's connected to the hostel. So not only are we serving or having guests and travelers, Panamanians and people from all over the world, we decided to actually have a small convenience store to offer, you know, basic goods to the small village that we're at, because there wasn't anything even there in the vicinity. You had to go really to the main Villa Volcan, or you had to go to Bugaba to buy anything. So we tried to, our intention was to actually have more than one business at once operating. So that's been very good, because obviously right now, due to COVID, the tourism aspect is absent. We're closed, but at least at the moment we do have the tienda operating, and it does generate a little bit of income for us. But you know, I look back on it, and I would probably think that it was, you know, trying to compare it to opening a business in the United States to Panama. As even though I had a headache a few times, it seemed like it did go kind of smooth. Now, that was obviously 4 or 5 years ago, and things have, you know, a little bit different, because when I first built my house in Varital, the necessary permission I needed to receive from the bomberos and from the town was completely different from Bugaba, because I was in a different district. So they, at least in Bugaba, they taxed me a little bit higher as far as the permission was concerned. And then the bomberos was a little more stricter with all the paperwork and the licenses from my electrician and from my contractor. My original house, I paid $15 for a permission to build, and I didn't talk to anyone else until the bomberos came to check the electric bill, so to turn on the electricity for me. So,
by the way, bomberos is the fire department. For those of you that don't know that word, it's the fire department he's talking about. Yeah, it's interesting that in Panama, every single district has kind of a different procedure and different prices for different things. So all the time I get an email from people, and they say, well, what does it cost to get a building permit in Panama? Well, it depends. You know, are you in Coronado or are you in Bugaba? Or are you in, it depends on where you are. So there's not one right answer to anything in Panama. It always, the answer is always going to be, it depends.
Yes, so true.
Yeah, so I guess now, especially because you can't, there's no tourists that are coming, you can't really operate the hostel, but it's good that you have the tienda that's providing some income for you. And I know right now you're in the United States because you really can't do anything here in Panama anyway. So normally, do you spend part of your time in the United States and part of your time in Panama?
It has been like that for the last few years. Generally, Obviously, I first started the construction process in 2016, and we were allowed to operate. See, the Panamanian Tourism Agency, they after we got the second inspection, they allowed us to operate until we had the final inspection from the business organization. I forget the name of them. Autoridad de Negocios. They had the final say, but the tourism agency gave us permission to operate before we had the second the last permission. So we were operating for about 6 months with their signatures. Said don't worry about them, and when they come, and everything's all set. So we were always going back and forth, me and my wife and children. So we would spend 4 or 5, maybe at times 6 months in Panama, because we don't have residency yet. So we spend as much time as we could, build as much as we could. I mean, there's not a single time we don't go back there and we don't start a project or purchase more land. We're always reinvesting in our dream. The only time I've ever spent a full year there was probably in 2009 into 2010. And then after that, it's always been back and forth after 3 months, 6 months, 5 months. When we're not there, we have my stepson from my first marriage. He's 17. He's there, generally there with a couple other volunteers, and they hold the fort down. Now, typically, the high season is from November to April, and at that time, we do get a decent amount of guests and clients, but the other time, the other part of the year, it's a bit slower, and we are off the beaten path, and we're new, so obviously, Boquete is a little bit more touristy, and people tend to go on that side if they want to hike the volcano. But from the western side of the Volcan Baru, it is getting bigger. It is, you know, there's more expats retiring there, and people kind of like to get off the beaten path. So we've been slowly growing as well. But generally speaking, we are always there during the high season, and then during the slow season, we'll come back to the United States, which is in Massachusetts, is typically the summer. So we'll be back here from May all the way to September, October, give or take, and then we'll head back to Panama when the weather starts to change, and we'll go from there.
Mm-hmm. So for people that are interested, what you have a website for your hostel. What's the website?
Soursophostel.com. I'm also in the process of publishing my third book called Panama Dreaming, The Birth of Soursop Hostel.
That was the next thing I want to talk to you about. Tell us about your book that you're writing. It's called Panama Dreaming, and then tell us about it.
Well, it was inspired definitely from the hostel and the desire to raise my daughter. It basically documents from the beginning of entering Panama in 2009 all the way up until 2018, 2019. And it does go through all the hard work, the sweat, and the tears of building and dealing with the construction process, dealing with local Panamanians, the highs and the lows of actually, you know, my Spanish, I said a few Spanish words over this call, but my Spanish isn't perfect, and it wasn't perfect before either. You know, it was worse. So I had to struggle at times to get my point across, especially dealing with the paperwork. I was opening a business in a different country, and, you know, I wasn't fluent in Spanish, so it was difficult at times. And then, obviously, there was other people that came into play. There was volunteers from all over the world that you know, came from nowhere. You know, they just showed up at times, and they were looking to volunteer. And that's actually how I met my current wife, too. We actually grew up together, but I never spoke to her. We grew up in the same town, went to the same schools. She was 2 years older than me, but we had never spoken to each other. So, and during the process of building this hostel, when I first wanted to do it, someone mentioned the idea of starting a GoFundMe page. And I had no idea what it was. And so I looked it up, and I'm like, all right, well, you need to sign up for Facebook. And at that time, I wasn't on Facebook, and I particularly didn't really care for it. I'm like, oh, I guess I'll sign up if this is going to maybe help me raise some funds. And I did, and it helped me raise maybe a little bit more than $1,000 from some of my friends to get me started. And but it was out there online, right? It was out there on Facebook. And at the time when I was building the initial core in January of 2016, my current wife, she was in the United States, and she was actually looking for a vacation in Panama, of all things. And she came across my ad, and then she reached out to me wondering if I needed some help. So I said, of course, yeah, come on down. I loved your help, right? And thinking nothing at the time, like, all right, well, we'll see what happens. I mean, this is in January, right? And I'm here, and you're there, and people say they want to come help me all the time, right? So about 6 months later, I'm back in the United States, and I happen to see that she's back in her hometown too, and then we happen to meet up, and I'm like, all right, you want to help me out? You want to come down there next time I go? And she said, of course, let's do it. So, well, maybe it came in October. We ventured back to Panama, and that was when we started to build our two new rooms. So we already had the core, had to put two more rooms on and a bathroom to get the final inspection. So she first came out there at that point, and, you know, we worked so hard, and we had volunteers coming in as well. At times, there was six or seven of us, you know, working. Not as hard as me or my current wife, because there was just something. There was, you know, when you are fighting for something that is yours or your dream, no one will be able to work as hard as you. It's just a fact. So, but these people that came and helped, I mean, I'm so grateful that they decided to actually help my dream come true, you know, and it's unbelievable thinking about, you know, this person came from Germany to help me. This person came from Vietnam to help me. This person came from Los Angeles to help me. I don't even know these people. How did this happen, right? So from the people that helped me all the way up until, you know, the process of finally opening up or getting that permission in late 2017 to operate as a hostel, we actually ran a promotional, because like I said, we weren't allowed to be open completely, but the Panamanian Tourism Agency said, you're allowed to start if you want. You don't have the final paperwork, the final permission to operate, but you can start now if you'd like. So, well, we didn't want to ruffle any feathers, so we decided to run a promotion called Spreading the Love. It was in February of 2017. So we ran a promotion on, you know, on Facebook, on Instagram, and we put it out there. And we did get a few guests that month, and we told them, like, listen, this is a promotion. You know, we're not accepting money at all for your stay, but they were just so happy to be a part, to be like some of the first guests to actually stay at a hostel. They wanted to support us, and they actually paid for their stay, you know, and they spent a few extra days there to help us, which was really cool, you know. So it encompasses the ability to capture your, well, at least in my dream, right? So that was the ability to go for it, to fight against the odds. Like I said before, when I had split up with my ex-wife and lost the ability to raise my daughter, you know, that was the darkest time of my life. And it takes you from the beginning of that all the way to actually operating the Soursop Hostel and, you know, having the courage to put yourself out there for something, you know. I wasn't going to allow my daughter to go through her life absent her father. So I had to do everything I could to be a part of her life. I wanted to raise her, and that was the ultimate goal. And building the Soursop Hostel was my vehicle to take me there.
You know, I think sometimes whenever people can just sense whenever you have a passion for something and they want to be part of it. So it attracts people to help you fulfill your passion in creating that Soursop Hostel. So it's amazing in Panama that people from all over the world come here to retire. They come here to stay in a hostel. They come here just to go hiking through the rainforest. But It's just a little country, and people from all over the world come here, so it's just amazing. When you were doing that construction, did you, besides the challenges of dealing with government on permits and all those things, did you have any challenges with finding the right supplies to get construction completed?
Yeah, at times it was, well, I bought a lot at Franklin Hirado, but I also dealt with, finding earth. My initial core of the hostel was on a decline, so we had to bring in a lot of earth, but I couldn't bring any earth. There was no one around that we could find to actually bring some dirt to fill up the basement, the hell, I'm losing my mind here.
Just the foundation.
Yeah, the foundation. I don't know why that word slipped. So all we did was just dig dirt and wheelbarrow it, literally for a day and a half, just me and my ex-brother-in-law at the time, and we wheelbarrowed barrel after barrel. And he was supposed to work 2 days with me, but after one day, he didn't want to come back the next day because he knew what was coming the next day. And we just did it over and over again. And I had never moved so much dirt because we had to raise it close to 4 feet, and it was difficult. Beyond that, I mean, finding cement and finding the sand and the blocks were no problem. In Bugaba, you can find pretty much anything you're looking for in regards
Yeah.
to
They have a
materials,
really good Cochez. The Cochez there is excellent.
Yeah, Kochette is good as well too.
Yes. So, I do a lot of I do the Panama relocation tours, and I would say that probably 80% of the people that come on my tour are retirement age. What advice would you have for someone that's not retirement age that's thinking about moving to Panama?
Well, first things first, I wouldn't jump in all the way, right? I would put your feet in first and travel there and visit different towns and cities and kind of get a taste of what you're looking for, because the weather is completely different, as you know. Up in Boquete, in the Volcán area, it's much cooler. So if you want, it's still warm during the day. It's still gonna be hot during the day, but temperature can drop pretty low at night, and it rains a lot more too. If you want the beach, if you want to go to Bocas del Toro, or you want the island life, it's a completely different feel, a different vibe from where we are, right? So it depends if you want to grow
Right.
something. If you want to live off the land, well, you're not going to probably want to move towards Las Lajas because you're not going to be able to grow that much, right, next to the beach. So I would recommend going to Panama. First of all, do some research before you go there and kind of find out what kind of area, what province you want to check out and what you're interested in. And then find a place to rent for a little bit, whether you want to rent for a month, a little bit longer, or you want to bounce around in hostels or hotels and kind of pick and choose where you want to go, zigzag across the country, get an idea what kind of climate you're comfortable with. Because, when it rains in Panama, it is torrential, and certain places rain more than other places. Even though it might be the dry season in Cherokee, certain parts of Cherokee and David, for example, it'll be raining during the dry season in Bocas del Toro, next to the islands in the Caribbean, right? So, all depends what you're looking for, but
Right.
definitely do your research, and then I wouldn't jump in just right away. I would bounce around and also go on the no plan plan in a sense, right? So go there, go with the flow, speak with the people, and just get some recommendations and kind of just go with the flow and trust your gut.
Yeah, one of the things that I talk about quite a bit on the tour and in the articles that I've written is that people that are not retirement age that are moving to Panama, if you think you're going to get a job here, it might take a long time. Plus, people won't hire you unless you have a work permit, which means you need a visa, a permanent visa, before you can get a work permit. So it would be a good idea for you to come up with some kind of a business that you're running before you ever even come to Panama, like an online business. There's a lot of digital nomads that live here in Panama, but selling things on Amazon, writing ebooks, starting a hostel, some kind of a business that you're going to need to be able to support yourself here, because if you think you're going to come here and get a job, it might take a long time. So you're going to need to have at least a year, if not 2 years, worth of savings while you're waiting to try to get a job.
Yeah, I agree.
And some right now, there's so many companies all over the world that they're letting their workers work from home. And now that the employers are getting comfortable with their workers working from home, there's really no need for you to stay in Kansas City, Missouri, or Dallas, Texas, or Los Angeles. You could work from home anywhere, including Panama. You just need to clear that with your boss first, but you could be a remote worker right here. Just make sure you live in a place that has a good internet connection. Some places in Panama have fiber optics where you're going to have really reliable and fast internet speed. Other places don't. They only have satellite internet, and it's not going to be quite so fast. So you need to take your time, like Nicholas said, take your time exploring the different areas of Panama just to decide which one feels right for you, but then also figure out before you get here how you're going to make money to be able to support yourself, because it's if you're not retired and you don't have an income coming in, you're going to need to figure that out before you can make that move here. So when is your book is going to be on Amazon, and it'll be ready in September? Is that right, Nicholas?
Yeah, I'm shooting for September. It should be out hopefully by mid-September, but we're trying to put our finishing touches on it right now, the book with the front cover and the back cover and final editing process, combing through as well. And it's been fun to work on. There's no doubt about it. Going back and looking at my notes, the things that I've written down from literally 2009 all the way up to, the beginning of 2016, and now just a year ago, some of my other notes, and kind of piecing it all together, and it's amazing in a sense where I look through all the volunteers that, there's probably been close to 30 or 40 different people, maybe even more, that have come to help and lend a hand, and then I would look on my goal wall, because when I first started the hostel, I painted on the wall, what is your goal? And I got the idea from a book written by Jack Canfield about success principles. And is that my connection? Yours?
Yeah, you're still
okay.
Here.
Okay. So I painted on the wall, what is your goal? And underneath that, I painted my goal is to open up the Soursop Hostel for the world to visit, and for all the visitors to leave destined to pursue their dreams. So in his book, he discussed the idea of writing down 101 goals. Write them all down. It might take a long time for you to do it. Doesn't matter how small, how big these goals are, but write them down. Now, I never end up writing down 101 goals, but I wrote down a lot. But my idea behind the what is your goal wall was to have all the guests and volunteers that came to the Soursop Hostel paint their goals on this wall. And eventually I would reach 101 goals collectively. And reading some of the goals, when I look back on it, and when someone wrote it in 2016 or this past year, it's just amazing how just that idea of chasing after your goals and dreams can actually inspire others to do it. And we all have different goals and dreams too. So I really appreciate the people that actually went there and want to paint their goals, because not everyone wanted to do it too. I never forced anyone to paint their goals on the wall. Maybe it wasn't their thing or they weren't sure what it was. But if I inspired someone to actually go out and leave the hostel that time when they left, and they go out and chase their goals and dreams, I feel good about that, So They say
if you write down your goal, you have a much better chance of achieving it than if it's just in your head and you never put it to pen or you never write it on the wall.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So in just a little bit, I'm going to open up the call for questions from our audience. Is there anything else you'd like to share with everyone before I do that, Nicholas?
No, I'm ready to answer some questions whenever you want.
Okay, let's do it. So, David is my first caller. Welcome back, David. He calls in every Saturday. Go right ahead, David.
Thank you so much, Jackie, and thanks so much for having me to be part of your Saturday call-ins. I thoroughly enjoy them, and I look forward to them.
Well, we look forward to having you on here every Saturday, too. Thank you.
Thank you. What I want to know, and basically what I do is I put my questions down before if any caller. So I wanted to know, basically, after a person gets down in Panama and they settle in, whether it's a primary place or a secondary home, maybe after 5 years, what would you say the percentage of people renting versus owning? I mean, how many people after being there for 5 years would actually rent versus purchasing their own place?
I don't really have strong statistics on that, but just in the hundreds and hundreds of people that I know, I would say that it's probably 25% buy something and 75% continue renting.
Okay.
So it's not real high numbers on the number of people that buy. A lot of it also depends on the area that you're in. Some areas have a higher concentration of homeowners to renters than other areas do. But just in general, I would say it's 25 to 30% are owners and the rest are renters.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
So let me give you a little bit of just my theory on why I think that might be.
Okay.
A lot of people want the flexibility to be able, the people that are renters, they want the flexibility to say, okay, you know, I've done this beach thing for a couple of years. I think I'm going to go live in the mountains for a little while. Or they might even say, expats in general are very adventurous people. And some of them, they don't want to put their roots down too deep. They might spend 2, 3, 4, 5 years in one country, in Panama, and then say, I think I'm going to go live in Portugal for a little while. Or I think I'm going to go try Medellin, Colombia for a little while. Or, you know, maybe their mom gets sick and they got to go back to Phoenix, Arizona for a little while. By renting, it gives you the flexibility to be able to do that. Because in Panama, it's easy to buy. You can buy real fast. In just a couple of weeks, you can buy. But selling is a whole different story. It could take years to sell something. Years. I know people that have had properties for sale for 9 years. And they've lowered the price and lowered the price and lowered the price, and it hasn't sold. So if you want the flexibility to just be able to pick up and go, then it's nice to be a renter, especially during these pandemic times, because there's some people that they just wanted to be close to their family during this whole pandemic thing. And if they owned a house here, they either had to get a renter or a house sitter or something, or they just had to stay here. They couldn't really just lock up and go. Because they didn't know when in the world they'd be able to come back. But people that were just renting during these pandemic times here in Panama, they could say, because in Panama you can give a 30-day notice and cancel any lease. You might not get your security deposit back, but you're not liable for those lease payments. So people that were renters, they could just pack up and go to be back home with their family.
Right.
So,
and even having Nicholas on, another option is doing a hostel.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
We actually do offer long-term stays as well at a discounted price for expats and for anyone, really. We've had a few over the years, and it tends to work because, you know, like Jackie was saying, people, they want to bounce around, but they also don't want to, you know, put their roots deep in the ground too much. They might only be there for 6 months, but they want a place more centralized, and you know, they want to hang out on the mountainside. For coming from our point of view, and you know, you can get it. You can rent a vehicle, or you can have a vehicle, or you can catch the bus. You can go pretty much anywhere you want by bus in Panama too. So if not, using a taxi. So their transportation is fantastic, in my opinion. So yeah, long-term stays are a great option.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, David. Our next caller, I believe, is Davey. Go ahead.
Hi, is this us, David and Barbara?
Hi.
Hi. Our question is, again, about renting. And we have read all your section about renting and trying to do it on your own is the best policy. But we have two medium-sized dogs, and I think that's going to make it a little more complicated. And I'm wondering, would it be easier for us to find a rental in Boquete versus Volcan? And should we actually just go to Casa Solution to help?
You're not going to have a hard time finding a rental with two dogs. If you had six dogs, you might have a bit of a challenge. But with two dogs, that's pretty normal here in Panama to have two or three dogs. Everybody has a couple of dogs. So you're not going to have a problem. And whether it's Volcan or Boquete or David or any of the Dolega, any of the little towns in between, you're not going to have a problem finding it. What you need to do is get on Facebook on some of the rental sections for each one of those areas and just look and see what people come up with. Of course, you can also go through a real estate office too, but sometimes the very best deals are ones that are not with a real estate office. They're going to be just through an individual that's renting out their own house. So the best approach when you're looking for a rental in Panama is do all the approaches. Get on Facebook, get on Craigslist, contact real estate agents, do everything and see what's out there, which one feels right.
Okay. Do you think it's feasible that if we go, we would be able to find something to pin down within 2 weeks, because we have to have that in order to train the dogs, because they would have to be quarantined at a certain address.
You wouldn't have any problem at all.
Sufficient in Boquete area.
Yeah, you would. Ideally, before you ever even get into the country, you have three or four different properties lined up to go look at, and probably within 2 or 3 days, you can have one that's already selected. So I don't think you'll have a problem at all. Thanks again for calling in. Our next callers are Mark and Anna. Go ahead. Mark and Anna, I've unmuted your lines. Hello? Well, I'll try the next one. Next caller is area code 403. Go ahead.
Hi, Jackie. It's Ted and Doris here in Canada. The question I wanted to ask is... What are the government laws there with regard to a Canadian citizen moving to Panama, becoming a permanent resident, in regard to the income taxes that would be involved?
So you don't have any. In Panama, it's a territorial taxing system. So you're only taxed on income that you earn in Panama. So if you sell any products or services in Panama, then you owe taxes in Panama. But any income that you earn outside of the country, you owe no taxes at all. As a Canadian citizen, you can also significantly reduce your taxes by becoming a non-resident of Canada, too.
All right. Specifically non-resident Canadian, but becoming a permanent resident in Panama will eliminate that tax
situation.
Yeah.
Okay. You would owe no taxes in Panama.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Next caller is Warren. Go ahead. Warren, go ahead. Your line's unmuted. I think some people have their line muted. Okay, next caller is David. Go ahead. Hello? David, we've unmuted your line. Ricky, your line's been unmuted. Go ahead.
Hello. My question is, do you ever, you know, if the expats in Boquete, do you ever see anybody riding bicycles around? Is it safe on those streets? What do you see?
So there are a lot of people that ride bicycles in the Boquete area, but they never ride them in town. It's too dangerous to ride a bicycle into town. You see people riding way up in the mountains, away from the traffic and away from the cars, or things like that. But for to use it for your main mode of transportation, you'd be taking your life into your own hands if you did that.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for all you do.
You're welcome. The next caller is area code 850. Did you have a question for Nicholas? Go ahead.
Yes, thank you. I appreciate both of you. I was wondering, Nicholas, I didn't get the name of your book. It sounded like you said Panama Dreaming the Birth of Soursop.
It's called Panama Dreaming the Birth of Soursop Hostel.
Okay, so it's Soursop.
Uh-huh.
That's
Sour
correct.
Stop, hospital, yep. And
okay.
And God willing, it'll be released next month of September.
Okay,
is
that
have,
one word?
Do you have a page up for it, Nicholas, on Amazon people can?
Actually, on
okay,
Facebook,
good.
You can actually search on Facebook. I have a Facebook page called Panama Dreaming, the Birth of Soursop Hostel. And on Amazon, you can also search my author page, Nicholas Gagnier. That's GAGNIER as well.
It'll
okay,
be an interesting
you.
Read. Yep.
Oh, I'm sure. This is the first time I've really, you know, reached out and considered going to Panama, and I'm looking forward to when the relocation tours resume. May I ask you about that, Ms. Lange?
Sure. Yeah, I have no idea when the relocation
okay.
tours are going to resume. So this is the situation in Panama right now. They have allowed now, they have flights coming into Panama, but only Panamanians or people that already have a permanent visa are allowed to come into Panama. And then they require a 14-day quarantine when they get here. My concern is that, you know, maybe November, December, they're going to start letting tourists come in also. But if they require a 14-day quarantine for tourists, and I think they probably will, we still wouldn't be able to do the tours because most people, they can't come here and, you know, sit in a hotel room and have that expense of the hotel room and have food delivered to your room for 2 whole weeks before you ever even start the tour. So we're not going to be able to resume tours until everything gets back to normal. But the other thing you could do is come to Panama and stay at the Soursop Hostel for 2 weeks. Right, Nicholas?
Absolutely. We'll take care of you. You can go outside in our farm and grab as much fruit, oranges, limes, avocados, cacao, soursop, obviously, pears. We have yuca,
wow.
peppers,
nice.
grapefruit, guava. Marañón. So there's a bunch of fruit that are in season various times of the year. I mean, I like the dry season because, you know, it doesn't rain as much, but I tend to like the rainy season a bit more in Panama only because from where I am, all the fruit trees are all popping, right? Everything's bountiful. So
yeah.
everything's greener. It is a little bit more muddier, but every day you go outside, there's almost too much fruit to consume. So we try to take as much as we can and share it with our guests and obviously feed my family too. And, you know, everyone has, at least in the village where I'm located in Sortová, most people have all
what
these
is it
fruit
called?
Trees too. Sortová, Sortová.
And is that near Vulcan?
Yeah, it's on the way
it's
to Vulcan.
South.
It's on.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
You're going up the road towards Volcan Baru on the western side, right? This isn't going towards Boquete on the eastern side of the volcano. So it's still a beautiful area. I mean, we are about 1,200 feet above sea level, so it's really nice and cool at night. I don't even have, I mean, we have fans in the rooms, but I don't even use them. I'll just open the window, and it's perfect at night. You know, during the day, it can still hit, you know, 90 degrees in the sun. There's no doubt about it. It's still hot. But come nighttime, my favorite time of the day is when it hits that 6, 7 o'clock dusk, and we'll take our guests, or we'll go with my family. We'll take a sunset hike to the nearby hill that overlooks the Pacific Ocean. You can see into Costa Rica. You can see all the lights. It's about a 20-minute hike.
Wow.
It's nothing too extraneous. Some days we'll do the sunrise hike, which is kind of, we'll go up the same spot, but it's just on the other side of the hill, and we'll watch the sunrise come up over. And it's a great way to start the day, because, you know, it's, for me, at least experiencing the sunrise, it signifies kind of a new beginning in a sense, you know, a fresh day, a fresh start again, you know, and kind of gives me that extra jolt to enjoy my day.
Yeah, that's, you brought up a really good point. Whenever they require this 14-day quarantine, it says you have to stay on your property. So if you were just going to stay in a hotel, you'd have to stay in your hotel room the whole 14 days. You cannot leave the hotel room. But if you stayed at Soursop Hostel, or you had some other place that was rented that had a pretty big property, you could get out and you can go walk on the property and pick limes off the lime tree and oranges off the orange tree and whack down some bananas with a machete. And you don't feel so confined as you would in just a condo next to the beach or a hotel room in Panama City. But
right,
until they do away with that 14-day quarantine, it's just not feasible for us to start doing tours, unfortunately. And that's one of the reasons that we started the online Panama Relocation Guide, is we know there's a lot of people that they want to move to Panama as soon as they can, or come and check out Panama as soon as they can. But it's going to be a while before we can start doing tours, and even then, the tours that we have are sold out for a while. We'll have some openings when we open up, but the online Panama Relocation Guide gives you all the same information about how to find a rental, how to get your pet into the country, should you ship a car, who do you call to get your household goods here. So all the immigration attorneys, reliable real estate agents, where to buy health insurance, all those things are covered in that. So you can get the same information without going on a tour. So our next caller is Stephen. Go ahead.
Hi, this is Cindy, Steve's wife. I wanted to ask Nicholas, can we purchase your soursop tea online? And also, would you speak to the climate in that area?
We are not offering our leaves just yet. That is something we're looking deeply into, using DHL. I know certain places in the world we basically cannot send anything to in regards to produce. And I have brought leaves back before. I ear sealed them, and I had no problem bringing them into Florida. Me and my wife have discussed selling leaves and even the seeds too. And as far as the climate is concerned, right now, this time of the year, it's the rainy season, so the rainy season generally there and where the hostel is located, where the Soursop Hostel is, it'll start raining towards the end of April and into May, and it won't really start raining really, really hard until almost September, October, where it can be pretty bad at times. But it will generally rain almost every single day, but every morning it's gorgeous out. And then, you know, I'm not sure if you've ever been to Florida or not, there'll be an afternoon shower, and for a few hours, and it'll kind of go away again, and the night is clear. During the dry season, which will typically start towards the end of November to beginning of December, it can be pretty rough at times. It was really hot, but it, like I said, since we're so elevated, come the afternoon, it'll cool off very nice. So even though the dry season will stretch into March and April, it still cools off at night. And luckily, where we are, we have a great water source. So certain places in Panama, you know, in David, for example, in Panama City, there'll be times of the year where there's no water. You know, luckily, thankfully, we have water year-round. And it's good. We don't boil it. We drink it. It's fine. We have no problems at all with it. And we always have it, too. So we're grateful for that.
So the weather in Boquete and Volcan is very similar. Just to tell you, I'm in Boquete right now. So it started raining about the same time this call. At 5 o'clock, it started raining. Just a light, gentle rain right now. And I just checked the temperature. It's 68 degrees in Boquete right now. I'm sure it's raining over in where the soursop is, and it's about 68 degrees over there also.
Nice. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
You're welcome.
And my next caller, Myra, go ahead. Myra's a regular also. How are you doing, Myra?
I'm fine, Jackie. How are you?
Great. Thanks for calling in today.
Okay, so my question, either for you or our guest, I wanted to know about mailing things. I wanted to actually mail a cell phone, and I was told that I couldn't do it through FedEx because it's not a brand new phone. So I wanted to know if you would recommend DHL or possibly another source.
You want to mail it? You want to mail it to Panama?
Correct.
So this is whoever you're going to mail it to needs to go and set up an account with a mail forwarding company in the town where they live, and then they're going to assign them an address in Florida, in Miami. And you can send that mail phone, that cell phone, Federal Express or DHL or even just regular mail to Miami, and then it will be sent to Miami, then it's put on an airplane and taken to Panama and put on a truck and taken to the town where they live, and they have to go there to pick it up. To get it actually delivered to their house isn't going to happen. They need to set up a mail forwarding account. Okay, and our next caller is John. Go ahead.
Hi. Actually, this is John's wife, Karen, and I'm calling from Texas. My question relates to a question that the gentleman from Canada asked several questions back. It made me think. So what can you speak to the pros and cons of dropping residency in the U.S. if my husband and I did relocate to Panama?
I can. Are you, I see that you're in the 512 area code. Are you in Austin?
I am.
Okay, then you don't have to worry about it. Some people live in a state that has high state income tax, and if that's the case, it would be a good idea for you to move your residency to a state that does not have a state income tax before you move to Panama. Otherwise, even if you're retired, some states are going to tax you on your Social Security or pension that you get from a job, even though you're not living there. If that's where you have your driver's license and if that's where you claim your residency, you'll still have to pay state income taxes. So you just want to move to your residency to either Florida or Texas or someplace that has no state income tax, and it's no problem.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. So we've got time for about one more caller. And I have no name. It just says anonymous.
Hi, Jackie.
But your line's
Hi, Jackie. This is Gene from Chicago. I'm interested in trying to find a Goldilocks climate, and I was thinking that a place like Delgado, which is about halfway between Boquete and David, I could go into David by bus or go up to Boquete if I wanted to go to the social thing. Is that a good place to live? Is it developed or not?
Dolega is the name of the town. Dolega is about halfway between Boquete and David. It's a very nice town. It's also a walkable town. You know, if you get a rental that's pretty close to town, you can. There's grocery stores and pharmacies and restaurants and all kinds of things you can just walk to avoid having a car. There's bus stops everywhere that in 15 minutes you can be in Boquete or 15 minutes you can be in David. The thing about Dolega is it is a little bit warm. It's not as hot as David, but the weather's not as cool as Boquete. So the best thing to do is go there and get a short-term rental, maybe for a month, and make sure you like the weather there. And then if you do, then you could extend your lease for a little bit longer. There's also areas that are halfway between Bugaba and Volcan that would be similar.
Well, I'm looking for some amenities, and the other thing is 68 degrees, I'd have my sweater out.
Yeah, well, that's because it's pouring down rain right now, and it is a little bit cold. But if you were in Dolega, it would be about, probably right now, it's probably about 78 degrees in Dolega.
Perfect.
About 10 degrees warmer. And then if you were in David, it would be another 10 degrees warmer also. So yeah. It's that sweet spot, perhaps, for you, halfway between.
Yep. Okay.
It's also really pretty there. They have and super affordable. I put something on Facebook the other day about a really cute two-bedroom, two-bath house. It's not furnished. That one's not, but it was only $250 a month. But I just found one today that's a two-bedroom, two-bath, big yard, covered parking for $350 a month.
Oh, great. Sounds wonderful. I had something that was on PBS. There are people from Africa trying to go through the Darien Gap into Panama. Are you aware of all that?
Oh, yeah. I've seen that before.
Yeah. And apparently they just keep them moving through Panama.
Yeah,
and
they send them off to
Costa Rica.
Yeah, they don't let Panama... It's pretty strict about their immigration rules in Panama compared to some other countries. If you want to live in Panama full-time, you have to get a residency visa. If you don't want to live in Panama full-time, you can stay here 6 months as a tourist. No visas necessary. But if you want to stay full-time, you have to get a visa. So they don't stay. So we do have time for just one more call. I believe it's Martha. Go right ahead.
Hi. This is Martha from Iowa. I thought I heard your guest say that during the time he was working on getting his permits and had just started building his place, that he didn't have residency yet, so he was coming back to the States and coming back in. And so I guess my question is surrounding – it surprised me that he was able to start the process of getting, you know, approved and all of that kind of stuff before he had residency. Can you talk a little bit about that?
I'll let you answer that one, Nicholas.
Yeah, well, I was, in a sense, I was surprised, too, that I could start a business without having my residency there. I was pleasantly surprised. But the fact remained, as long as I had a valid U.S. passport, I could. So I went straight ahead to reach my goal and build that hostel. Now, I don't have my residency currently either, and my plan is to get that when I do return. But you can buy a piece of property there without having your residency, and you can open up a business without having your residency. So those things aren't required, which is kind of – it does seem strange on the surface, but, you know, it doesn't – in fact, it helps people that want to be able to do such a thing. So if you have – that desire to go to Panama and you want to just find a piece of property and maybe, you know, you don't have your residency yet, you should have no problem purchasing it at all.
Yeah, I thought you'd need it in order to be able to actually sell a product, in other words, rent a room or do whatever you needed to do.
Well, I do have all my tax information. They have it. I pay my taxes in Bugaba for both my businesses. As long as I'm paying taxes like everyone else, there's no problem at all.
Okay, cool. Thank you very much.
No, thank you.
Yes. So, Nicholas, I want to thank you so much for joining us on the call, and I'm so excited for you about the Soursop Hostel and Retreat Center, and really excited to read your new book whenever it comes out. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you very much, Jackie. You have a wonderful day.
Thank you, and thank you for everybody that was on the call today. I hope you have a great weekend. Good night, everybody.